Ultimately, a study of the fathers tends to be rather disillusioning to the average fundamentalist Christian. The fleshiness and fallibility, the errant humanity of the men who have so immensely and profoundly shaped Christianity takes them by surprise. The studied evidence of the fathers' beliefs and these that can be found in their own and other writings paints a picture of early Christianity that is rather different from the overall simplistic story of spirituality and heroism that is associated with the biblical book of Acts and the general fundamentalist concept of early Christianity. The heroes are not so clear-cut in this early period of the church's history. They do not fit into the fundamentalist, smug Sunday school conceptuality of, quote-unquote, the man of God. This is why church leaders in the Caribbean particularly, but again, not exclusively, fundamentalist leaders, sweep the fathers under the carpet, so to speak. Of course, the same idealistic, predominantly literal mode of historical analysis and interpretation extends to these churches' conception of the life and work of Joshua of Nazareth. They take the Gospels mainly at face value. The period of the Reformers, and in fact every era of Christianity, including the present, is similarly treated. Anything that soils the heroes or mars the glory of Christianity is understated or totally concealed. The result of this virtual conspiracy of silence is the prevalence of an idealistic brand of Christianity in many of our churches, a brand of Christianity which encourages and facilitates the lack of accountability that I am dealing with here. In seeking to maintain an idyllic, perfectionist image of Christianity, and in essence of themselves, their own beliefs and practices, fundamentalist leaders and congregations tend to extract themselves and their actions from the history of the church, or else to insulate themselves within it. At one extreme, they tend to idealize various periods of the church's history, and at the other, to assume that God blinked, was inactive, or severely limited his activity during those periods. Ultimately, and in a very real sense, these Christians tend to detach themselves from history and from reality. End of quote. I believe the annual rash criticism of revelers by a significant number of our religious leaders and their followers is a reflection of their detachment from reality. I believe it is largely the product of those moralistic persons' historically ill-informed or uninformed generalizations. As I have indicated before, I see these reactionary criticisms as intellectual, spiritual, and or political gyrations that are just as deplorable as the excessive behavior the clerics criticize. I firmly believe that if our church leaders will desist from their idealistic, one-sided representations of Christianity's past, they will find it easier to be open and honest, first with themselves and then with Caribbean people generally, about present issues affecting Christians and the wider masses of the people of this region. In Barbados, we are grappling with an escalation of crime and violence and a general trend of indiscipline and rebellion against authority, which has evolved over time. Many of our citizens, including this writer, are looking to our churches for a meaningful, systematic, constructive response to these issues. many of us are disappointed with the blame-shifting, finger-pointing, adversarial, judgmental positions that many of our clerics continue to hold. Such idealistic, self-righteous, we and them assessments of our problems hint at the underlying fragmentation, elitism, historical hollowness, and shallowness of fundamentalist religious reasoning in the Caribbean. They hint at fundamentalism's lack of consistency and sustainability, which make its contributions to social problems outweigh its contributions to social solutions. Literalistic, easy, believist fundamentalism claims to promote the surest knowledge of God. It claims to offer the sweetest assurance. However, simplistic, literalistic approaches to matters of faith are known to obstruct faith's sustainability. The success or sweetness of such faith is usually short-lived, like one of those substance-lacking, jump-and-wave, breakaway calypso hits that rush to the top of the regional music charts and then disappear. In the end, no one takes the message of these songs seriously. So too, shallow Christian fundamentalism facilitates a seductively sweet but fragmentary, brittle, and divisive quality of faith that tends to encourage a confusion of reality with ideology and ultimately leads to disillusionment. It is widely known that the mental anguish, anger, bitterness and confusion that comes with religious and or broader ideological disillusionment can be devastating, especially to the young. Adolescent Christians, for example, are particularly prone to the post-fundamentalist syndrome of giving up on religion altogether. This syndrome, which Professor James Barr alludes to in his book, Escaping from Fundamentalism, is a byproduct of the typical elitist, exclusionary, and divisive claim of fundamentalist groups that they alone faithfully practice the worship which God requires, and their corresponding systematic inoculation of their adherents, setting them against other ideological and or belief systems. These tactics discourage many young and old people emerging from fundamentalist groups from considering alternative faith systems or valuing variety or variance of opinions within their particular faith. I am particularly concerned for our youth here in the Caribbean, in South America, in the South Pacific, in Africa, and in other developing regions where this matter is concerned. The social, economic, and related cultural pressures that these territories face make their youth more vulnerable to the idealistic, escapist appeal of fundamentalism and subsequent disillusionment. I believe that young people's resort to deviant, irresponsible, and even violent and criminal behavior often stems from this kind of escapist dreaming and subsequent disillusionment and frustration of their dreams. This opinion was strengthened by a news story I heard in 1996. In a report on the alarming increase of murders in Jamaica in that year, around 560 by the month of August, Jamaican psychologist Dr. Lechim Simaj suggested that there was a link between the murders and what he called the death of dreams among Jamaicans. Another, perhaps more pertinent and sobering statistic